Today is Friday, December the 19th, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Trump delivers fascist diatribe in year-end speech. By Patrick Martin. In 1933, analysing the first months of Hitler's regime in Germany, Leon Trotsky wrote in scathing terms about the historical regression taking place in what had once been a centre of European culture. Quote, "What inexhaustible reserves they possess of darkness, ignorance and savagery. Despair has raised them to their feet. Fascism has given them a banner. Everything that should have been eliminated from the national organism in the form of cultural excrement in the course of normal development of society has now come gushing out from the throat. Capitalist society is puking up the undigested barbarism. Such is the physiology of Nazism, from what is National Socialism." Unquote. These words come to mind while listening to the speech delivered by Donald Trump Wednesday night. In the course of 18 minutes, the president spewed a toxic mix of blatant lies, racist bigotry against immigrants, and barely veiled threats of violence against political opponents. His remarks demonstrated for all the world to see that the president of the United States is a sociopath, actively preparing for mass repression and the establishment of a military police dictatorship in America. His sole policy proposal was to award a bonus of $1,776 to all U.S. soldiers, a transparent bribe aimed at securing their obedience to Trump's orders, at home and abroad, no matter how illegal. Trump attempted to cram into the brief time allotted by the television networks all the lies and appeals to backwardness that typically fill his 90-minute campaign-style rallies. He rushed through the speech at a near-manic pace, giving the impression that he was either on medication or in need of it. The tone of Trump's speech was significant. He appeared angry at the American population and nearly panicked over the likely consequences of the mass opposition his fascist policies have provoked. In the past 2 months, millions have marched in No Kings protests. Trump-backed candidates have suffered heavy defeats in the off-year elections, and Trump's own poll numbers have fallen sharply. His remarks had a Hitlerian character, with immigrants taking the place of Jews in his fascist demonology. He blamed every social ill of American capitalism: high prices, unemployment, crime, homelessness, the housing shortage, decaying schools, and a dysfunctional healthcare system, on immigrants. He singled out Somalis, refugees from a crisis provoked by US military intervention, for particular venom. The big lie of a supposed invasion by 25 million immigrants, who he claimed come from prisons and jails, mental institutions, and insane asylums, was combined with another falsehood, that Trump's policies are benefiting the working class. He boasted of entirely fabricated, huge wage increases for factory workers, construction workers, and miners, while claiming that wages overall are rising faster than prices. This flies in the face of the actual experience of working people, whose living standards have steadily eroded, not only under Trump and Biden, but for decades, as the super-rich have seized virtually all the growth in national wealth since the 1970s. Adults under 40 now constitute the first generation in modern American history to face lower incomes and poorer prospects than their parents. Jobs figures published this week by the Bureau of Labor Statistics show that the unemployment rate has risen to 4.6%, the highest in 4 years, with 700,000 more workers unemployed today than when Trump re-entered the White House on January 20th. Trump piled lie upon lie: $18 trillion in foreign investment supposedly obtained through tariffs, gasoline at $1.99 a gallon, food prices falling rapidly, and negotiations to slash drug prices by as much as 400, 500, and even 600%. Since a cut of 100% would reduce prices to zero, Trump's figures are simply gibberish. He operates according to the principle of his mentor, Roy Kahn. You create your own reality. Equally significant is what Trump did not say. He made no mention of the impending war against Venezuela, or the slaughter of more than 100 people in bomb and missile strikes on small boats in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific. Nor did he refer to his deployment of troops in American cities, or the tens of thousands of immigrants rounded up and held in detention camps, including children. Media commentary, after the speech, bemoaned Trump's easily exposed falsehoods, his vicious and menacing tone, and his obsessive fixation on blaming every problem either on immigrants or on the Biden administration. But there was no attempt by the Democrats to offer a political rebuttal. By Thursday night, the speech had disappeared entirely from the evening news. The Democratic Party is doing nothing to oppose Trump's drive toward dictatorship. There have been no calls by any leading Democrats for his removal from office. Indeed, the Democratic Party leadership has explicitly repudiated any suggestion of impeachment. This, despite Trump's repeated violations of the Constitution, including the illegal deployment of the military in Washington, D.C., and other U.S. cities. Just hours before Trump delivered his speech Wednesday night, a majority of Senate Democrats voted to pass the National Defense Authorization Act, handing the White House nearly $1 trillion in military funding as it prepares to launch a war of aggression against Venezuela. When Trump forced a government shutdown in October, throwing hundreds of thousands of federal workers out of their jobs, the Democrats rushed in to bail him out and avert any confrontation. Since their electoral victories in November, Democratic leaders have only deepened their collaboration. The new governors of Virginia and New Jersey pledged to work with Trump. New York City Mayor-elect Zoran Mamdani, hailed by the DSA as a model of democratic socialism, visited the White House for a photo op and announced a partnership with the fascist president. Most importantly, the Democrats are doing everything in their power to chloroform the working class and obscure the fact that preparations for a presidential dictatorship are advancing by leaps and bounds. Democratic governors claim to oppose Trump's persecution of immigrants by filing lawsuits. At the same time, they collaborate with the unions to suppress any organized resistance by the working class to this illegal and unconstitutional regime. Trump speaks not merely as an individual, but as the embodiment of the American capitalist class. He was placed in the White House to serve as the political representative of finance capital and the oligarchy. He is their man. His administration acts on behalf of billionaires like Larry Ellison, Stephen Schwarzman, Jeff Bezos, and the major banks and hedge funds that dominate every lever of political power. Trump's drive to accumulate unchecked authority and establish a presidential dictatorship is not simply the product of his grotesque personality. It arises from the insoluble contradictions of American and world capitalism. The U.S. ruling class, beset by crises at home and growing challenges abroad, is turning to authoritarianism to defend its wealth and global dominance. The class character of Trump's fascist agenda explains the cowardice and complicity of the Democratic Party. The Democrats, no less than the Republicans, are instruments of corporate America. Whatever tactical differences they have, they both defend the interests of the financial oligarchy and agree on the main elements of policy, abroad and within the United States, and the Democrats are terrified above all of opposition from below. The degraded, panic-stricken, even hysterical character of Trump's speech is not merely a reflection of his personal instability or increasing incapacity. It is an expression of the mounting fears within the ruling class as a whole which faces convulsions in world financial markets, the rise of China, and growing resistance in the working class at home to its policies of austerity and militarism. The physiology of the fascist cabal in the White House is a modern manifestation of what Trotsky described in 1933 as the cultural excrement vomited up by a capitalist society in terminal crisis. The task of the working class is to raise its opposition to the Trump administration and the capitalist system it defends to the level demanded by history, the building of a mass revolutionary movement to establish a workers' government committed to socialist policies and the expropriation of the oligarchy. This is inseparable from the fight to unify the working class internationally in a common struggle against imperialism, dictatorship, and war. GM moves to permanently lay off 1,145 workers at Factory Zero amid record profits and UAW silence. By Jerry White. Unless it is halted by collective action by workers themselves, the coming week could be the last for 1,145 workers at the General Motors Factory Zero assembly plant in Detroit. The automaker plans to slash production to a single shift beginning January 5th, 2026. The permanent layoffs are being imposed on the eve of the holiday shutdown, which runs from December 24th through January 4th, leaving workers to face unemployment and the loss of health care during the most financially precarious time of the year. The job cuts follow a brutal year in which Factory Zero workers were subjected to extreme levels of overtime, routinely working between 72 and 80 hours a week for much of 2024. These conditions were followed by irregular, temporary layoffs, creating a cycle of exhaustion and insecurity. Both shifts were placed on temporary layoff until November 24, 2025, before GM announced the move to permanently eliminate more than 1,000 jobs. The United Auto Workers bureaucracy has not even made a pretense of opposing the mass layoffs, which will only deepen the social crisis in the city which houses the headquarters of both GM and the UAW. The official poverty rate in the Motor City is already 35%, with 51% of children living in poverty, according to the census report. In the statement, mobilized to stop GM layoffs at Factory Zero in Detroit, build rank-and-file committees, the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, the IWA-RFC, has called on workers to form independent committees capable of organizing a real fight, unifying workers across plants and borders, and breaking out of the isolation imposed by the union bureaucracy. Only the mass collective action by workers can stop the layoffs and fight for the right to secure good-paying jobs for all. The layoffs are not the result of any financial losses for GM. In October, the company raised its projected 2025 net profits to between $12 billion and $13 billion, up from a prior estimate of $10 billion to $12.5 billion. This followed record profits of $14.9 billion in 2024. GM stock has risen approximately 55% over the past year. According to an investor note published December 12th on the financial website Trevis, in the last decade, General Motors, GM, stock has returned $45 billion back to its shareholders through cold, hard cash via dividends and buybacks. This represents 58.4% of GM's current market capitalization, more than double the median payout ratio for companies listed on the S&P 500. GM is also indefinitely laying off 550 workers at the Lordstown, Ohio Ultium Cells battery plant. An additional 850 workers there will be placed on temporary layoff effective January 5th, and 710 workers will be temporarily laid off at the Spring Hill, Tennessee, Ultium Cells battery plant beginning the same day. Hundreds of workers at the nearby Ford Rouge Electric Vehicle Center in Dearborn, Michigan, also remain on layoff, with company executives considering whether to scrap the F-150 Lightning EV pickup truck altogether. This is part of a global jobs massacre in the auto industry. VW, Bosch, ZF, and other German auto and auto parts companies have announced 50,000 job cuts in the first 10 months of 2025 alone. Together, these cuts expose the fraudulent character of the claims by the automakers and the UAW that the electric vehicle transition would bring stable, high-quality jobs. A young worker who was laid off from Factory Zero several months ago told the World Social's website that he had heard through the rumour mill that the GM Lake Orion plant, which has been closed for retooling for 2 years, could ramp up or resume production in the third quarter of 2026. The facility is currently being reconverted back to internal combustion engine production, after earlier being tooled for electric vehicles at enormous cost. When I was at Factory Zero, I think I was, for the first year, working 12-hour shifts, he said. After being laid off for at least the second time in just a few years at GM, I lost my health care. The Affordable Care Act subsidy is probably not going to be continuing next year, so it will be really tough for some of us. He described the complete lack of information from the United Auto Workers. One of my buddies was like, "Don't really expect much from the local. I don't think any of the people involved in working in the union actually know what's going on. There's just a lot of uncertainty." Contrasting the company's soaring profits with the conditions facing workers, he said, "The stock price of the company keeps going up and up." He noted that GM and other automakers had received massive tax cuts. "I thought the whole point of trickle down was for the money to trickle down. Stock prices are going up, and it's not trickling down." He added that there had to be a way to tax people that are getting rich off of stock buybacks, and said younger workers were increasingly alienated from both corporate-backed parties. "My generation, we are just tired, and we've only been doing the adult thing for a few years now. There has not been a single good president in my lifetime. We are looking for an alternative." Anger over the union's complicity is widespread. A veteran worker at the Stellantis Toledo assembly plant told the WSWS, "The union just doesn't back the people. We had this stand-up strike in 2023, and Jeep was one of the few plants that were called out. That was stupid. We should all have been out at the same time. The union gives into the company so much. There's never a 40-hour week. It's like my life is Jeep. You can't plan anything for your family. We've got more than 1,000 guys on layoff, and they don't want to go back to three shifts. That's why we're working all these hours, and guys are getting hurt." When I first hired in there in the late 1990s, the union was still strong. But man, how things have changed. He voted against the 2009 concessions, explaining, "I wasn't going to give up on anything. I pay $100 to the UAW every month," he said. "I don't call it union dues anymore. I call it medical insurance. That's the way you have to look at it, because it's gotten so bad, and it's just going to get worse." He pointed to the vast VEBA, Voluntary Employees Beneficiary Association, Retiree Healthcare Trust, as a source of corruption. "There's enough in there to take care of great-great-grandchildren." He said second-tier workers, who do not get pensions and retiree healthcare, constitute more than half the workers at Stellantis. "When we workers with pensions die off, the UAW and the company are going to dip into that money for themselves. You follow the money, and you're going to see the corruption. It's billions and billions, and it's going up every month." On the rank-and-file campaign of Will Leeman for UAW president in 2022, he said simply, "It was great, great, great. I voted for him because he was a rank-and-file and was trying to get the people on the shop floors together. It's hard, but that's what we have to do." The worker also expressed anger over Trump's witch hunting of immigrant workers and war threats against Venezuela. "I'm against them blowing up fish boats and killing people. They don't even know what cargo they had." Hundreds of thousands of workers have viewed WSWS videos featuring Factory Zero workers, reflecting the depth of opposition. Online comments echo the same concerns. One worker wrote on Reddit, GM is going to transfer the laid-off workers to St. Louis or Texas, and 90% will decline, resulting in being fired and disqualified from unemployment. Another asked, should we just call jobs in the automotive industry temp jobs from now on? Responding to a discussion of the UAW's role, one worker explained, because the UAW and Sean Fain supported Trump, and the reason this plant is closing is because Trump removed the EV tax credit, essentially killing demand for EVs, and the UAW didn't do anything to fight against these policies. The layoffs at Factory Zero are the predictable outcome of capitalist restructuring, driven by investor demands, automation, and profit maximization. Under capitalism, workers' livelihoods are subordinated entirely to Wall Street. The role of the UAW apparatus has been to facilitate this process by refusing to mobilize the membership and by backing nationalist policies that divide workers by country and plant. The bureaucracy has functioned as an arm of corporate management. What, then, should GM workers do to oppose the impending layoffs? Asked this question, Socialism AI, the new chatbot launched by the World Socialist website, emphasized that workers cannot rely on appeals to management or the union leadership. The defense of jobs requires independent, democratic organization on the shop floor. Rank-and-file committees, formed by trusted workers in every department and shift, must take control of the struggle, demand an immediate halt to layoffs, and fight for full pay and benefits for all affected workers. Such committees would unify workers across plants and industries, prepare collective action, including strikes and mass protests, and link Factory Zero workers with auto workers nationally and internationally through the International Workers Alliance of Rank and File Committees, the IWA, RFC. Only by breaking from the nationalism promoted by the UAW apparatus and advancing an internationalist perspective can workers counter the global auto industry's restructuring strategy. The fight to defend jobs at Factory Zero raises fundamental political questions. It is not simply a dispute with one company, but a confrontation with the capitalist system itself that sacrifices workers' lives and livelihoods for private profit. The transformation of the auto industry, automation, EV production, and technological change must be placed under democratic workers' control and reorganized to meet social needs, not the further enrichment of wealthy shareholders. The impending layoffs at Factory Zero are a warning. They demonstrate that without independent organization and collective action, workers will continue to pay the price for the capitalist crisis. The growing anger among auto workers points to the possibility of a broader movement, one that links the defense of jobs to the fight for political independence of the working class and the reorganization of society on socialist foundations. Democrats vote to give Trump $1 trillion for global war. By Andre Damon. U.S. President Donald Trump signed the 2026 National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, into law Thursday, completing the passage of the largest military spending bill in U.S. history, $901 billion, or over $1 trillion when combined with supplemental funding passed earlier this year. The Senate voted 77-20 on Wednesday to pass the bill. The Democratic leadership, including Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York and Minority Whip Dick Durbin of Illinois, voted for the bill. They were joined by Senators Mark Kelly of Arizona and Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan, both of whom released a video last month calling on military personnel to disobey illegal orders, as Trump was sending the U.S. military on a murder spree off the coast of Latin America. Citing Trump's statements about using troops to shoot protesters in America, Slotkin invoked the legacy of the Nuremberg tribunals, which convicted Nazi leaders for war crimes and crimes against peace. But when it came time to vote, this invocation was revealed to be completely meaningless. Slotkin voted to hand Trump the resources to pursue his military adventure against Venezuela. The $901 billion authorization is $8 billion more than Trump himself requested, combined with the $156 billion in supplemental military funding passed in July. Total military spending for fiscal year 2026 will exceed $1 trillion. To put this into perspective, the 2015 NDAA authorized approximately $600 billion in military spending. Sections of the media have promoted the claim that the NDAA compels the release of video footage of the September 2nd strike in the Caribbean, in which US forces killed two people clinging to the wreckage of a destroyed boat. This is a fraud. The legislation merely cuts Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's travel budget by 25% unless he releases the footage to congressional committees, a meaningless gesture that Hegseth can easily circumvent. While the Democrats provide the votes for Trump's military build-up, the corporate media has lined up behind his campaign against Venezuela. The Washington Post, owned by centibillionaire Jeff Bezos, Wednesday published an editorial headlined, "Blockading Venezuela is Trump's best idea yet to squeeze Maduro." The Post declared that Trump's blockade of Venezuelan oil shipments is a more coherent and legally defensible strategy to bring about regime change. The Post editorial explicitly endorses regime change, the violent overthrow of a foreign government, as a legitimate aim of US policy. It states, "The best case scenario remains Maduro retreating to some faraway country, followed by Mercado somehow taking charge in Caracas." Maria Corina Mercado is the leader of the US-backed Venezuelan opposition. The New York Times, which is aligned with the Democratic Party, this month published a six-part editorial series calling for a major expansion of U.S. military capabilities. It declared that, in the short term, the transformation of the American military may require additional spending, primarily to rebuild our industrial base. The Times is calling for even greater military spending, framing it as necessary to prepare for war with China. The Democrats fundamentally agree with Trump's program of military escalation. Their criticism of the administration is not that it is preparing for a catastrophic war in Latin America, but that it is insufficiently committed to the conflict with Russia in Ukraine and is threatening to draw down troop levels in Europe. The NDAA includes provisions restricting the Pentagon from reducing U.S. troops in Europe below 76,000. A measure aimed not at opposing Trump's militarism, but at ensuring that conflict with Russia continues. The NDAA directs $34 billion toward nuclear weapons programs, further advancing a massive expansion of the US nuclear arsenal. This escalation traces back to policies initiated under the Obama administration, which in 2016 unveiled a plan to modernize all three components of the nuclear triad at a projected cost of $1 trillion over 3 decades. Since then, the price tag for this overhaul has surged, with current estimates approaching $1.5 trillion. Other provisions include financing the Sentinel ICBM missiles, new nuclear-armed cruise missiles, and $13 billion for a Golden Dome missile defense system. Trump announced Tuesday a total and complete blockade of all sanctioned oil tankers going into and out of Venezuela. He demanded that Venezuela return to the United States of America all of the oil, land, and other assets that they previously stole from us, a statement of intent to rob Venezuela of its oil resources. The blockade is already having devastating effects following the U.S. seizure of a Venezuelan oil tanker last week. At least five supertankers, originally headed for Venezuela, have reversed course. Seven oil tankers at Venezuelan ports have idled for nearly a week, according to the Wall Street Journal. Strict enforcement of the blockade would curtail hard currency inflows, stoking food and fuel shortages while exacerbating inflation, which the IMF estimates will reach nearly 700% next year. Since early September, U.S. forces have killed at least 95 people in 25 separate strikes on boats. On Monday alone, the military announced it had struck three more vessels in the Eastern Pacific, killing eight people. The Democrats have provided Trump with the resources, the legal cover, and the political support for a war of colonial plunder against Venezuela. Workers in the United States and throughout the world must oppose this imperialist war drive and build a mass movement against war and the capitalist system that produces it. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.